spell," said Lobsang, smiling. The abbot leaned forward and dribbled in the chief acolyte's ear. He gave up. "Of course, it is not up to us to question you," he said, backing away.
"No," said Lobsang, "it is not.
I suggest you all get on with your very important work, because this plaza is going to need all my attention." There were frantic hand signals amongst the senior monks, and gradually, reluctantly, the monastery staff moved away.
"They'll be watching us from every place they can hide," mumbled Lutse when the sweepers were alone.
"Oh, yes," said Lobsang.
"So, how are you, then?"
"Very well. And my mother is happy, and she will retire with my father."
"What, a cottage in the country, that sort of thing?"
"Not quite. Similar, though." There was no sound for a while but the brushing of two brooms. Then Lobsang said, "I'm aware, Lutse, that it is usual for an apprentice to give a small gift or token to his master when he finishes his apprenticeship."
"Possibly," said Lutse, straightening up. "But I don't need anything. I've got my mat, my bowl, and my way."
"Every man has something he desires," said Lobsang.
"Ha! Got you there, then, Wonder Boy. I'm 800 years old. I've run through all my desires long ago."
"Oh, dear, that is a shame. I hoped I could find something." And now Lobsang straightened up and swung his broom onto his shoulder. "In any case, I must leave," he said. "There is so much still to do."
"I'm sure there is," said Lutse. "I'm sure there is. There's the whole stretch under the trees, for one thing. And while we're on the subject, Wonder Boy, did you let that witch have her broomstick back?"
Lobsang nodded. "Let us just say, I put things back. It's a lot newer than it was, too."
"Ha!" said Lutse, sweeping up a few more petals. "Just like that. Just like that. So easily does a thief of time repay his debts."
Lobsang must have caught the rebuke in the tone. He stared down at his feet. "Well, perhaps not all of them, I admit," he said.
"Oh?"
said Lutse, still apparently fascinated by the end of his own broom. "But when you have to save a world, you cannot think of one person, you see, because one person is a part of that world," Lobsang went on.
"Really?" said the sweeper. "You think so? You've been talking to some very strange people, my lad."
"But now I have time," said Lobsang earnestly, "and I hope she'll understand."
"It's amazing what a lady will understand if you find the right way of putting it," said Lutse. "Best of luck, lad. You didn't do so bad on the whole. And is it not written? There's no time like the present."
Lobsang smiled at him and vanished. Lutse went back to his sweeping. After a while, he smiled at a memory. "An apprentice gives a gift to the master, eh? As if Lutse could want anything that time could give him." And he stopped and looked up and laughed out loud. Overhead, swelling as he watched, the cherries were ripening. Tick! In some place that had not existed before, and only existed now for this very purpose, stood a large, gleaming vat.
10,000 gallons of delicate fondant sugar cream infused with essence of violet and stirred into dark chocolate, said Chaos. There are also strata of hazelnut praline in rich buttercream and areas of soft caramel for that special touch of delight.
So, you're saying that this vat could exist somewhere in a truly infinite everywhere, and therefore it can exist here, said Death.
Indeed, said Chaos.
But it no longer exists in the place where it should exist.
No, it should now exist here. The maths is easy, said Chaos.
Ah, well, maths, said Death dismissively. Generally, I never get much further than subtraction.
In any case, chocolate is hardly a rare commodity, said Chaos. There are planets covered in the stuff.
Really?
Indeed.
It might be best, said Death, if news like that did not get about.
He walked back to where Unity was waiting in the darkness.
You do not need to do this, he said.
What else is there? Said Unity. I have betrayed my own kind, and I am hideously insane. I can never be at home.